This is A Sharp Outlook on TalkZone.com, the show that helps you grow your business and enrich your life. Now, here's the host of A Sharp Outlook, Angela Sharp.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to A Sharp Outlook on TalkZone.com. We are the program that you want to tune into to get thought-provoking information. If you are a small business owner, an entrepreneur, a visionary, or someone who's wanting information to achieve self-determination empowerment, we are the station to tune into. We have wonderful guests with expert information that you can connect with, that you can get reliable information, that you can build your infrastructure and information technology. You can get stronger governance and learn about all those new social media tools to get reliable marketing, and we can even help you with your skilled workforce. So this is the station to tune into, A Sharp Outlook on TalkZone.com. And today we have a very exciting topic to discuss. In fact, I would just like to say, knock, knock, someone is at your door. Guess who? It's HubZone. HubZone is there, and it was created for small businesses that are owned or controlled by 51% U.S. citizens, or they're a community development corporation, an agricultural cooperative, an Indian tribe, or they are located in a historically underutilized business zone. They're knocking because they have opportunities for small businesses to grow, and that would directly impact, you know, your areas with money to build your economic development, to bring jobs, to bring economic strength to your particular area. I had an opportunity to look at a map, and there are a lot of counties that qualify for HubZone certification. So we have our guest here today to give us more information on how you can become a HubZone and you can take advantage of that opportunity that's knocking at your door. Today I have Mariana Pardo. She is the director of HubZone, a program that the United States Business Administration, the SBA, has put together for these underutilized zones. As director, Ms. Pardo is responsible for issuing final determinations on firms applying for HubZone certification. The continuing monitoring of certified HubZone small businesses and adjudicating protests of eligibility regarding HubZone contracts. In December of 1998, Ms. Pardo joined the federal workforce as business opportunity specialist in the SBA Small Disadvantaged Business Certification Processing Unit. In July 2006, she became director of the 8A Business Development Certification and Continuing Eligibility. On May of 2008, she became director of HubZone Program. Under her leadership, the HubZone team developed and implemented new business processes to reduce fraud, waste, and abuse. Ms. Pardo was born in Montevideo, Uruguay, South America, and moved to the U.S. in 1973. She lives in Fort Washington, Maryland, and holds a master's in technology management. Hello, Mariana, and welcome to A Sharp Outlook, and I thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much, Angela. It's a pleasure.
Well, I kind of gave a little brief idea about HubZone, but for our listening audience, can you give us some information about what HubZone is so people can begin taking advantage of this opportunity?
Definitely. The HubZone program was developed in the late 90s. Actually, I think that it was deployed in 1999 when the regulations were finalized. And it was in direct response to bring back manufacturing that was really leaving the country for overseas cheaper labor costs, basically. And the intent, and that hasn't changed over the years, was to provide an incentive for industry to move into these economically distressed areas that were experiencing a very, very high unemployment, and encourage them, incentivize them to move into these areas with the hook was, and it has been, that they can actually compete for contracts that are set aside for these businesses located in these areas. Over the years, it has changed slightly in that whereas it began with the thought in mind was to attract manufacturing firms into these areas. Over the years, it evolved into also having firms that are in other industry sectors, such as service, you know, IT, janitorial, for example, engineering, and construction. Because obviously in those industries, you have a workforce that does not necessarily work at the plant, which is, you know, the business model, obviously, in manufacturing. So this program is one of those that really each one of us in each of our states can experience firsthand. We all have, throughout the United States, all of us have areas in our states, in our counties, that are economically disadvantaged. They could be census tracts that are very, very poor, or they could be entire counties that are experiencing high poverty rates, high unemployment, etc. So it's a program that really connects us all in the same manner. And again, companies that apply for this certification, then they're eligible to compete, to basically submit bids on solicitations that are set aside just for firms that have this HUBZone certification.
I was reading that almost 3% of the contract budget for the federal government has been set aside for these HUBZone programs. Is that accurate?
Let me reframe that, yes. The law that created this program back in the 90s specifies that 3% of contracts need to be set aside for HUBZone. So each agency has to set aside 3% of their work, of the solicitations for HUBZone certified firms, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And now the set-aside mechanism, it could be, for example, it could be a set-aside if a contracting officer sees that there's more than two or more HUBZone firms that are eligible to do this type of work, that have the qualifications to do the work. So they need to set it aside, you know, if they have basically what happens in the federal agencies, just to make sure that all your listeners understand. A federal agency has the options. They have a lot of different goals, and they have to set aside or contract 3% of their contract dollars. They have to be with HUBZone certified firms. But they also have certain percentages. Now, that 3% is by law. They also have other goals that are not specified by law, but they are negotiated as part with the Small Business Administration, that they need to set aside a certain percentage for women-owned small businesses, service-disabled vets, small business in general, etc. So, for example, if I am the head of a particular contracting division in a particular agency, and I'm at the moment I'm exceeding my HUBZone contracting goals, I may choose to go women-owned small business set aside because I'm already met my HUBZone goals, for example.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Each agency looks at where they're at in terms of their goals for small businesses and all the different categories, and then they can set aside the work accordingly.
So they're able to expand their opportunities. Like you said, they max out on the HUBZone dollars that are available, but because they're working with a specific agency, they can even continue to do additional work because there's additional funds available. So, you know, you're opening up a much wider door of opportunity for people who, who get involved in this.
True.
So can you give us a brief description of who actually qualifies? I know there are people, they say it's in disadvantaged areas, but are there some specific communities that really qualify?
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. The first of all, a business obviously needs to have its primary, its principal office. Its principal office must be in one of these HUBZone areas. Now, a HUBZone area can be either an entire county. It can be, as I mentioned earlier, a census tract. It can be Indian country. Indian mm-hmm. country in its entirety qualifies as a HUBZone. It can be a base that has closed under the BRAC, the Base Realignment Act. It could be a difficult development area, for example, outside of the continental USA, in Hawaii, Alaska, Puerto Rico, for example, the territories. So a business must have that principal office located in one of these areas. Now, what is important to note is the principal office, and this is spelled out in the regulation, does not necessarily mean that that is the headquarters of the business. So a business could have the headquarters in a, not in a hub zone, and yet have the principal office in a hub zone. And how do we define principal office? The principal office is the place where the greatest number of the employees for the business are working from. And obviously the reason why it has the greatest numbers requirement there is because this is for economic development. So by having more employees working out of this hub zone location, you are, you're basically, helping other businesses around there so that your own employees in this hub zone area would be patronizing businesses around there, you know, buying a sandwich across the street or dropping off the dry cleaning next door, that type of thing. Now, the business also has to have at least 35% of its employees must reside in a hub zone. You notice that I said a hub zone. It does not need to be the hub zone where that principal office is located. So it can be a whole array of different, if a business has different locations, it can have employees located all over the country because this is a national contracting program. So long as the employee has at least 35% of its employees residing in a hub zone, that is another qualification. As you mentioned earlier, at least 51% of its owners must be U.S. Citizens. And, of course, the business has to be small, you know, for under the size standards for its primary NAICS code.
So I'm going to give you a scenario because I'm thinking about the fact that you have these prime businesses in these hub zones that help qualify for the hub zone dollars, but can they not partner with a manufacturing firm that maybe already exists but wants to maybe bring some portion of their manufacturing to that particular area or even work with someone in that hub zone so that you're bringing jobs? Is that possible?
Yes. It's all a matter of how they are going, what that partnership means. So, for example, if I'm looking into, I'm looking at the hub zone certification as a mechanism to add business to an existing, you know, business, I may approach a manufacturing firm and say, I also have a manufacturing firm. Could we partner? Now, the partnership to apply for hub zone certification might not be as clean because, again, it has that requirement that the business applying for the hub zone certification must be owned and controlled at least 51% by a U.S. citizen. So if they want to change the ownership of the business applying, that is a little bit more complex, obviously. What we see sometimes is that a business would apply for certification, would obtain the certification, and then when they start bidding on contracts, they may subcontract a portion of the work. So, for example, let's say that the work involves building manufacturing pants for the Army. And the order is going to be much too big for the time frame that I need to deliver these pants for the Army. And I may choose to look around and see another manufacturing that I could partner with, meaning subcontract under the terminology of contracting parlance. You know? And so then I could go, and now there are some limits, obviously, in subcontracting, but I could subcontract 20% of the work, for example, to a non-hub zone firm that may be located in the same county, perhaps not in a hub zone, but I'm also helping the economy as a whole in the county itself, too.
Right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. This is A-Sharp Outlook on TalkZone.com. And when we return, we will continue to talk about the hub zone opportunities for disadvantaged locations.
Mm-hmm. Now, back to more of A Sharp Outlook on TalkZone.com. Here's Angela Sharp.
Welcome back, and thank you for listening to A Sharp Outlook on TalkZone.com. Today we are talking about hub zone opportunities for communities that are in hub zone areas. And we're finding out exactly what a hub zone is and how you can qualify for dollars and take advantage of opportunities that are knocking. One of the things I stay on top of this because I get notifications regularly about trainings from small business and also Hub Zone, and I noticed, or I read something earlier about there are some bills that might be going into Congress to expand the criteria of Hub Zone to include others. Where does that stand?
Yes, as you mentioned, that's correct. There's been some legislative proposals, and right now is the Senate side and the House side, they've been looking at different proposals. Nothing has been finalized yet. So mm-hmm. the moment that obviously belongs to our legislators, our House of Representatives and the Senate, obviously, to pass a bill that would amend or expand these areas. So right now we don't have any expansion right now, but there's been discussion, obviously, of trying to see how we can have other areas become hub zones.
Okay. Like I said before, I receive notifications on a regular basis about training. You have YouTube videos for training so that people know how to complete the applications or to reapply or, you know, get recertified. How is that approach, how beneficial or how successful is that approach right now?
It's been working very well. We see firms investing the time in coming into the webinars, listening to the webinars that are recorded already. They're on the site. And most important, we do have office hours, meaning we have an 800 number that is open to the public on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And in these office hours are basically the topics during the office hours are driven by the participants. And then we use those fact patterns that a participant may bring into the call to explain different components, different requirements of the program. And what we're seeing is that the firms that take a little bit more of a methodical approach into learning about the program, how the program would work, how they need to develop the strategy to maintain compliance, because earlier we were talking, for example, that at least 35% of the employees must reside in a hub zone. Well, what does that mean for a firm? What happens is if an employee moves across the street to a non-hub zone location? And so the firms, the more they learn about strategies, how to incorporate the program into their own business strategy, the better prepared they are as they apply for the certification and also in retaining the certification afterwards. So the trainings are very, very useful. We get a lot of positive feedback, and obviously we're going to deploy more. We usually have these trainings around the holidays or so because we find that is a good time of the year for people to business slow down a little bit, depending on the industry, obviously, but then they begin to think about ways of expanding. And then if they apply within, 3 months or so, they can still sometimes receive the certification before the end of a fiscal year, federal fiscal year, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the certification application process, how long does it generally take for a business to get certified?
Yes. SBA, we aim to process an application within 90 days from the time that we receive the supporting documentation from the firm. It varies depending, obviously, on the complexity of a case, and it varies, obviously, on how prepared the company is. If we see companies that are extremely prepared and they give us a very, very complete package and we don't have to ask for any more information or clarification from them, because they're actually giving us the entire information, and they even are resolving some inconsistencies that they may, that the paperwork may have. So in those situations, I see some cases are some certifications are determined within 90 days, some of them even within 60 days. But we also have some that sometimes takes us 4 or 5 months to determine. Some complex cases may need review from our procurement law attorneys. And a few cases from time to time, we need to reach out to a size specialist, because a firm may have other affiliations, and that may be indicating that the firm may be exceeding that small business size standard for the primary industry code that we call NAICS code.
So what you're saying, the biggest issue is those that are applying need to be prepared. And I know I've looked out on the website, and it's such a step-by-step process. And if they follow the steps, they get everything that they need to be able to, you know, apply. The main thing is having documentation and supporting documentation for every statement, for every request that's in the application. So if they're prepared, they should be able to get through it pretty quickly then.
Yes, yes, that's correct. That's correct.
It takes
a while to actually assemble all that. So it is something important, obviously, for your listeners, that it's not a simple application in the sense that there is a lot of documentation. But like you're saying, Angela, these documents are really part of the business, regular business operations. You know, we're asking for, if it's a corporation, we're asking for corporate bylaws. Well, you already have them. We ask for payroll records, you know, that cover that particular time of the application. So the firms already have that document. So they don't need to be making up, you know, documentation.
Right. So if they're organized in their day-to-day business, then they should be able to handle the application process and get through it, you know, pretty quickly. And there may be additional information that you request. I don't think I've ever recall that sending something to the federal government that does not need additional clarification. There will be follow-up questions, but it's just a matter of getting an understanding of what it is that, you know, you're asking for.
Exactly.
And providing that. Now, when they're going through that process of the application, there are resources they can contact and call and get assistance. Am I correct?
Definitely, definitely. Many people avail themselves of local assistance. And if they go to the SBA website, right at the top, there is a tab there for local assistance. And when they put the their zip code, it actually gives the user, the visitor, a list of centers around the country that are closest to that location. So many companies actually go to a small business development center, a district office. They talk with procurement technical assistance centers, because initially is this certification going to be worthwhile for me? And so oftentimes they really want to talk with somebody to understand the federal procurement arena. If they haven't really been having the federal government as a customer, they really want to assess, is this going to be productive for me? They also send us emails to hubzone@sba.gov. Some firms request an appointment with an analyst, and the information is right there in the HubZone website on its homepage. They can actually talk with one of us for 15 minutes, and basically the more detailed information they give us as to what help they need, the better we're going to match them up with somebody else. And obviously, the office hours I mentioned earlier is another mechanism that firms use to understand better what they need to do.
So they're able to get training in advance before they begin the application, and then they can ask questions during the process. They can go to a job development center or a small business office or whatever to get assistance. So I'm wondering why there are some organizations that are not applying for the HubZone opportunities.
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. It demands what I would call a market analysis as to whether this fits. So first of all, obviously, they will need to take a look at what is the federal government buying already? So many firms go to the federal procurement data system, FPDS, mm-hmm. and they look at, they can search by NAICS there, and they already see what type of contract have they been awarded under that particular primary industry code. And once they learn that, and if it fits their needs, then they look at, okay, where are these being performed? What are the places of performance for this work? So if it is in an area where the firm believes that is an area that is they cannot service it, they may need to discuss alternatives, perhaps with the agencies, as the agency, obviously, these contracts usually have a lifespan of maybe 5 years, you know, one base plus four options sometimes, et cetera. So as they are looking at the market analysis of what's available. And then the other component, obviously, is the 35% employee residency requirement. They may already have a location that is in a hub zone they're working from, but maybe right now, maybe they have 100 employees, and out of those 100, maybe they have 10 that are residing in different hub zones. So they're going to need at least 15 more. And they need to take a look at, is this something that I can maintain, sustainability, you know, after I get my certification? What type of skills do my employees need to have as I bid on this contract? So there's a lot of considerations that firms need to go through before even applying, because obviously a firm may be already eligible. They may be meeting everything. But as they look at obtaining the certification and then keeping it, they may need to take a little bit of a step back and say, okay, how am I going to convince my employees to reside, to stay in a hub zone? When a new housing development happens down the street that happens to be not in a hub zone and the rent is cheaper. You know, there's all those things that they'd really need to think through, which other businesses don't have that consideration to take into account, you know.
Okay, I understand. So that can be something or add some complexity to making that decision. But I know like some of your rural counties I looked at and some of your urban counties and especially the Indian tribes, most of their workforce is going to be in those areas or in those neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So it really kind of baffles me a little that here's this great opportunity to be able to take advantage of this hub zone, and they do have the workforce there. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, maybe the workforce needs some skills training to be able to perform the duties, you know, for the contract or whatever. But I know there's a lot of consulting firms that are out there. There's a lot of things with SBA that provides skills training. So there are other opportunities and options available to get that workforce skilled mm-hmm. so that you can maintain that certification in that hub zone area, especially those that are very, very designated mm-hmm. and everything would reside like in that community.
Yes.
We're going to take another quick break. I want to, you know, dig through that a little more because I want people to know that opportunity is available and whatever information we can provide that gives you comfort to apply, we want to cover that today. This is A Sharp Outlook on TalkZone.com. We're going to take a break and when we return, we will continue.
Welcome back to A Sharp Outlook on TalkZone.com. Here again is Angela Sharp.
Thank you for tuning in to A Sharp Outlook on TalkZone.com. Today, our guest is Mariana Pardo, and she is here from the Hub Zone of the Small Business Administration, and she is giving us excellent advice for those that live in designated areas, for disadvantaged areas, low-income areas, and those that qualify as a hub zone. She's giving you information on how you can apply, how you can participate, how you can maintain your certification, and how you can help the economy grow where you are. So just before the break, we were talking about some of the reasons why you know, small businesses or tribal organizations or companies in some of these disadvantaged areas might not be applying for the HubZone certification. So we want to expound on that more. You were talking about the fact that it might be because of the employees, and I was mentioning that there's a lot of skills training that's out there, especially for manufacturing, because, you know, I hear on the news all the time, our skill, you know, we don't have a skilled workforce to do some of the manufacturing jobs. So I know there's training available. Mm-hmm. How can that information get out to people?
Yes. Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because it's educating, right? It's educating the firms about the program, and it's educating the firms about the programs available to help bring their own employees up to par with the skills that they need, you know. Mm-hmm. And there are local organizations. A firm should start with the economic development agency, perhaps, where they live, or go to the employment office and explain what they want to do, whether they're already operating from there or whether they're looking into locating a satellite location there where the majority of the employees are going to be working out of that HubZone area. The governments are very, local governments are extremely, extremely interested, obviously, in having industry establish roots in these economically distressed areas, because they're experiencing, obviously, in certain parts of the country, they're experiencing very high unemployment levels, very high poverty levels. And so these, by going into the economic development organizations, or they have different names, you know, depending on where you are in the country. But mm-hmm. you can start, perhaps sometimes you can start with the Chamber of Commerce, oftentimes, and they will know who within the particular state or county or even city government, who are the people that they need to speak with in terms of providing training. We have some companies that are certified already that establish linkages with high schools, with community colleges, in obtaining that influx of employees that are going to be trained and ready and able to do the work, you know, that the firms are gaining through HubZone contracts, obviously.
Well, that is great information, and I hope my listeners are really listening, that you don't have to be afraid to go after these dollars. There's help in all of the different areas where you feel where you might not be able to get the certification or maintain that certification because of, like I say, skill sets or location or whatever. There is assistance, there's advice out there to help you make that decision and, like I said, build the economy where you are. Like, there are some areas of the country that are experiencing extreme poverty, and it just seems like there's even such a great level of hopelessness because no one considers them as a place to employ people. But this is an opportunity where you can build something that would be there long lasting, that would raise everyone up from poverty. So it really is worth investigating, just, you know, to see what can be done for that community.
Go ahead. You mentioned location, and that's another item. Obviously, we've been talking about training of employees, but the location, let's say a firm is interested in a particular area because they see that there's a lot of opportunities here in terms of places of performance of contracts that is not too far from a particular area where contracts are being performed that this firm would like to be bidding on. And they locate areas that are close by where they would like to open a HubZone office. And by accessing these local agencies and state or county or city agencies, they can actually locate areas, facilities that perhaps have been abandoned or underutilized. And sometimes there may be opportunities where there are maybe some grants available locally, because they're trying to rebuild this area and maybe build an IT corridor or something like that, and they're trying to really revitalize this area. And they may even contribute a little bit towards the painting or the rehabbing of a particular exterior of the facility or interior. So there's a lot of, like you're saying, there's a lot of avenues that a firm can explore as they're looking at where to locate in the country.
Yeah. Right. So we have some contractors who, of course, have received their Hub Zone certification, and they have lost it. So most people, when they have lost their certification on any type of, whether it be a small business a vendor certification or 8A certification, Hub Zone certification, they have a tendency to want to give up and walk away. But what advice do you have for those businesses that have lost their certification? What do you suggest they do?
Sure. Unlike the 8A certification, for example, when a company that is 8A certified is terminated before graduating, before the completion of the 9-year program, they cannot reapply. You know, they mm-hmm. cannot come back in the 8A. In the HubSpot program, they can. From the moment that they're decertified, from that day that they're decertified, they may come back 90 days after that date of decertification. So we have some firms that voluntarily decertify because, for example, they're no longer meeting the 35%. It could be that a firm obtained a very sizable subcontract and they had to hire a whole bunch of people, and that place them under the 35% residency requirement. So they go ahead and voluntarily decertify because they know they cannot be out of compliance at any time. And the reason why they voluntarily decertify is because that starts the clock running on the 90 days. So then they're able to start recruiting and see if they can bring up their residency requirement and then reapply again in 90, 95, whatever, many days. Now, we have some firms that get decertified as a result of a protest. They were going to be awarded a HubZone contract. A competitor protested them, and upon further review of the firm that was going to be awarded that HubZone contract, lo and behold, we find that the firm is not in compliance with the residency requirement, for example. And so SBA decertifies the company because of that. Now, those are very painful decertifications, imagine, for the firm's perspective, because mm-hmm. they're about to get a contract, and lo and behold, they're found to be out of compliance at crucial times. We evaluate in a protest, for example, the firm needs to prove compliance at the time they submitted the offer, and at the present time if the contract has not been awarded yet. And some firms, either they cannot prove that they were in compliance because they didn't save the documents, and the employee left, for example, and they didn't have a copy of their photo ID for the employee, imagine, huh? And so poor record keeping sometimes, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. the company cannot prove compliance. So there are different lessons learned, obviously, as to whether a company voluntarily decertifies or is decertified by SBA. So, for example, a firm that is decertified under those circumstances from a protest, let's say, determination, obviously the lesson learned there is better record keeping. I need to make sure that as I'm hiring people and they are in a HubZone, that I collect the information to prove residency at the time that I have my employee in-house. Learning the regulations, you know, becoming really aware how important it is that I maintain compliance. The company that voluntarily decertifies because of the subcontract, maybe they just found out that in a subcontract environment, they cannot, there is a provision in the regulations that is called attempt to maintain. And it basically says, and that comes from the law actually that established the program, basically says that if a firm is performing on a HubZone contract as a prime, they can actually fall below that residency requirement we've been talking about. So let's say that I am at 35% or 40% when I obtained the HubZone contract, and as I hire people now I am at 25%. Well, I'm not going to risk my certification because I'm a prime and I need to prove to SBA that I'm making reasonable attempts to maintain that. So I'm going to give them copies of my job fairs that I'm attending to and job announcements, etc. But if I just obtain a subcontract, I cannot really avail myself of that exemption, you know, of that attempt to maintain. So this firm that voluntarily decertified perhaps just learned, they thought that they could actually go for the attempt to maintain, and then they find, oh, my God, we really cannot do that because we are not primes in this one. We're a sub. So there are different lessons learned, obviously, based on why is it that the certification was lost. You can have another company that lost certification because the area is no longer HubZone certified. So in those situations, perhaps it's okay. Perhaps the company really did not, going into this program, the company did not intend to remain certified forever. They wanted to establish themselves really well in this county. And now the county no longer is Hubzone certified, and perhaps even they help a little bit into the county not becoming Hubzone certified again. I mean, Hubzone designated again. And so the company voluntarily decertifies because of that. But others that want to remain certified, if they are in an area that is going to be losing Hubzone designation soon, they could actually open another office, if that makes sense for them. Obviously, it's very individualized, and make sure that they have the greatest number of the employees working from that other office. Now, granted, they still need to maintain that 35% residency requirement, which is a minimum, by the way. So companies that keep it right at the 35% level are always at risk a little bit, of course, in the residency area.
Okay, so you're saying that these Hubzone contractors can actually apply to be a prime or a subcontractor, just depending on the particular RFP that they're applying for, they whatever
can,
that.
Mm-hmm. Right, they can bid as they can bid on a Hubzone set aside that the federal government agency, a federal government agency, has set aside for Hubzone certified firms. And in that environment, they will be, if they get that contract, they're going to be a prime contractor. Mm-hmm. And so if they're a prime contractor, they can actually, as they're beginning to hire people to perform or deliver the services under that Hubzone contract, they may be able to, they actually can fall below that 35% residency requirement and not risk losing the certification. But if they bid on a subcontract, for example, that, let's say Boeing has, they bid on that subcontract, they need to know that going in it, they have to make sure that they have a lot more Hubzone. Usually what I see is companies are very successful subcontractors without losing the certification because they already are at about 60% or 70% Hubzone residency. So the fact that they may not need to hire additional employees, but if they hire some additional employees to perform on the subcontract, they go from 70% residency requirement now to maybe 40%. But they don't go under the 35%. So that's one of the best practices, obviously, on that.
And so all of this is pretty much when they get their certification, you know, they finish the application process, they have their certification, they can still continue to contact the mm-hmm. office to ask these kind of questions yeah. so they can maintain their certification. I mean, there's information available to them. They can go back. It's not a one-time situation. You only ask questions when you're applying, but after that, you're kind of left out there to swim. They still have support.
Oh, yes, indeed, definitely. Yes.
Okay.
There is a site in our website called Maintaining the Hubzone Certification and another section called Frequently Asked Questions. It has a lot of information for existing firms as they are encountering different scenarios, you know, and what they need to do to maintain that certification.
We're going to take another break. This is A Sharp Outlook on TalkZone.com. And when we return, we're going to find out exactly where the Hubzone is right now today.
Welcome back to A Sharp Outlook on TalkZone.com. Here again is Angela Sharp.
Well, thank you for listening to A Sharp Outlook on TalkZone.com. We are talking to Mariano Pardo, the director of Hubzone at the Small Business Administration, talking about the application process of Hubzone, how to certify, what kind of dollars are available, how to contract, your resources are available. So we're going to continue our conversation. I want to know where the Hubzone stands today. The federal government, their goal was to set aside 3% of its contracts for Hubzones. And I'm wondering, where are we today? Have we met the goals we wanted to meet?
Yes. Unfortunately, not. In FY13, the scorecard was released just a couple of weeks ago. And out of the 3% government-wide, we've accomplished 1.76, which amounted to a little over $6 billion. So there is a lot more work that needs to be done. And what we want to do better is obviously make sure that the acquisition community understands this program. We want to make sure that they understand how this program impacts communities and that they understand how to, what they need to do to set aside HubZone contracts, which is educating the acquisition community, the government contracting side in the federal government. And so we want to do, obviously, a lot more. We've been doing that, but we certainly need to do a lot more training. We also want to make sure that firms are more and more familiar about the contracting options, because oftentimes we find that a small business is in a perfect position to educate the contracting officers themselves too, and the program offices. As they go and market their companies, they go and market their companies and their services besides telling them what they can do for a particular agency, but they also tell the agencies the certifications that they have. And it may be a company that is self-certified as a woman-owned small business. It may be that it's self-certified also as a service-disabled vet. But as they say that we're HubZone certified, then they can go into a little bit more into the type of contracting mechanisms that that an agency could have, which are the set asides that we've been talking about. Agencies also have a mechanism in the federal acquisition regulations that is a HubZone sole source, and they also can look into a price evaluation preference mechanisms. The sole source and the price evaluation preference mechanisms are not as utilized as the set asides are. So we want to educate the firms a little bit more, particularly in the price evaluation preference area. And that's an area, obviously, my office here, we do a lot of the compliance reviews, so we don't get involved in the contracting side. So we are certainly partnering with the procurement center representatives that are SBA employees that are working with these agencies and are educating the acquisition community, but we need them to help us also educate our firms in that area so that they become more well-versed in the contracting arena, the different contracting mechanisms that exist there.
Yeah, I can see where they might even feel overwhelmed as they're looking at some of the contracts that are available. They may feel overwhelmed. Is there some mechanism that you have available where they can find out other vendors or that have been awarded the HubZone certification that they can talk to and actually maybe partner that might be in their area? Yes. Is there some way of them crossing, you know, some kind of cross list or whatever that they can find out who's in their area that's certified?
Definitely, definitely. There are, SBA needs to maintain a list of HubZone certified firms. And a firm can go into the frequently asked questions. And in the second question under the general questions of that area, they can click on the link that takes them to where that list is kept. And what is important about that list is a database. So when they click in that list, it is automatically going to give them, you know, they can delineate certain parameters. So for example, if I'm located in Alabama, I can select my state. Then I can select even my, the type of, NAICS. You know, what's the nature of my business? What do? I can put a keyword or I can put a NAICS code. And then I can actually even say whether I am in the manufacturing, construction, research and development, or services. And there's a lot of other fields that I can check there. But then I could do a search as to see who is already in my state that has to have some certified designation and is in my industry, for example. And I can actually schedule a time or to meet with them. Firms are always open to exploring possibilities, like you mentioned earlier, for quote-unquote partnerships. Could we subcontract with each other? If this firm that is calling me, I'm already certified, is this firm that is calling me already is thinking about becoming certified And once they become certified, maybe we could even joint venture and bid as a Hobson joint venture, because a Hobson joint venture requires two firms or more, obviously, that are already Hobson certified. So if we're in the same industry and we complement each other, maybe we could even joint venture and join forces and tap into, bid into a little bit more sizable solicitation. So I think that that is a wonderful, wonderful idea that you're bringing up, Angela, because that's a wonderful resource for firms to learn from each other and see what has worked for firms that are already certified in their area.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that because I know, you know, to some this is very, very new and they wouldn't be prepared. So being able to partner, joint venture, at least on some of the initial contracts would probably give them the confidence and give them the experience so they can begin to, apply for some of the larger contracts that are out there. I was looking on the website, and one of the things was very interesting. Some people are visual, and I wanted to mention it. There's a map on the HubZone website. It's www.sba.gov, content, HubZone, maps. You can go to that map. You can drill down, and you can look at the very areas where there is HubZone designation. We're going to get ready to wrap this show up, but I wanted to know if they could possibly contact someone in your office if they have additional questions or they want maybe specific training in their community or whatever. Where would they go?
Certainly, they can send us an email to hubzone@sba.gov. And one of us would respond. We can conduct, there are limited travel monies, but we can certainly conduct webinars, find a partner in their area that can actually deliver the training. We train the trainers around the country. So if there's a local SBDC, Small Business Development Center, a PTAC, or a district office, they can certainly conduct the training face-to-face.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. So there's a lot of opportunity out there for those that are listening to be able to be a part of this program that can change not only you as a business owner, but change the lives of a lot of people in the community. And so we want to take advantage of opportunities like this because if I recall, I remember her say there's billions of dollars available.
Correct.
So there's opportunity. You don't have a small grant that you're trying to apply for and you have huge competition. There's a lot of contract dollars that are available and you're able to contract, you know, with the federal government and provide, you know, services or products or whatever that can make a difference in your community, that can bring jobs, that can change that state of hopelessness. So I'm hoping that you're going to check into the HubZone, that you're going to find out information, you're going to search it out, and you're going to bring jobs using the HubZone certification program to your particular area. Would you like to say anything else, Mariana? I know I'm very thankful for you being on the show or anything else that you feel you might have missed.
I just want to echo exactly what you said. If a firm, for example, has already been successful in obtaining HubZone federal contracts. Let's say that they've been successful because they are a woman-owned small business or a service-disabled vet small business or a small business. They've been able to bid on small business set-asides, but the HubZone certification actually narrows the field of competition. So I may be already successful in obtaining these contracts, but imagine, like you said, having less competition. So by going to this database that we were talking earlier, you can also find out, okay, who is my competition? There's about maybe 5,000 businesses in our database that are certified versus hundreds of thousands and thousands of small businesses that I'm competing against whenever I bid on a small business set-aside versus a HubZone set-aside. So that's certainly another avenue for them to explore and take a look. And maybe I want to reduce the field of competition a little bit to raise my chances of getting more contracts.
Absolutely. Again, Mariano, thank you so much for being on our show. I know our listeners have gotten a lot of information to go out there and approach this opportunity. So again, this is A Sharp Outlook on TalkZone.com. We will be back with you again next week at 8 a.m. Pacific time. Again, thank you for listening and tune in.